Welcome to the Innate Vitality Code podcast, your source of science-backed information and inspiration on holistic healing, building resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Pennington. I'm an integrative physician, acupuncturist, and positive psychology neuroscience nerd. For over 20 years, I've been healing and teaching in my wellness practice, in the media, on stages, and around the world, as part of my soul's mission to end suffering and raise the consciousness on the planet. This podcast does not provide medical advice or psychotherapy. Consult your healthcare provider before implementing what you hear on this show. There are so many ways that our childhood experiences set us up for success or failure. And one of the things that I'm really so grateful for about the book, The Top 10 Traits of Highly Resilient People, is we have an opportunity to reframe the way we look at our childhood. We can glean the lessons from our painful experiences and turn it into strength. So I'm so excited to share this interview with you with Dr. Jinsing Gray Tillman. She learned Okinawan karate in her early youth from Master Willie Adams. She later learned Tai Chi as a part of her spiritual training over 25 years ago in Detroit, Michigan. She's a clinical doctor of physical therapy and has practiced for over 20 years. Jinsing has enhanced her practice with Tai Chi for Health, founded by Dr. Paul Lam. She also has a health coach certification from the National Society of Health Coaches and is a certified Tai Chi instructor from the Tai Chi for Health Institute. Jinsing has come full circle through literature review findings that support Tai Chi as an evidence-based exercise to improve balance, relaxation, breathing, leg strength, and fall prevention. Beyond the Western medical research supporting the benefits of Tai Chi, Jinsing is exploring its potential for mind-body healing. She has experienced the effects of mental and emotional and physical healing, and using her Tai Chi along with holistic healing, this is what she's sharing with the world and will share with you now in this interview. Enjoy. It's time to upgrade your life. In this podcast and our live events and retreats, we explore ways to hack enlightenment by integrating ancient wisdom and modern neuroscience with transpersonal psychology. From plant medicine and psychedelics to breathwork, mindfulness, and neurofeedback, my guests and I will shine a light on the unique capacity that we have to use our conscious mind to evolve individually and collectively as a species. Tune in each week on your favorite podcast player or the Pennington Media YouTube channel for interviews and discussions about holistic healing of trauma and adverse childhood experiences, burnout recovery, and intentional wellness. Jinsing, it is so wonderful to be connected. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for submitting your story for this book. Welcome.
Thank you.
So how does it feel? You're a published author. You've already hosted an event where you talked about your chapter, gave out copies of the book. How does it feel?
It feels like a whirlwind, and it feels a lot different than I would have imagined. After like the day that the story came out in May, the day that the book was globally published, I had a feeling that I wasn't expecting. I thought that with my regular outgoing personality, talking, I thought I'd want to stand on the top of a mountain and say, "Hey, everybody, I published this story and I'm in this global book and it's amazing." And I had an experience I wasn't expecting, that I was very quiet, and I didn't want to stand on a mountaintop. I actually wanted to go into like a cottage and just sit peacefully and quiet, not because I was afraid or shy, but because I was having this other experience that was surrounding me, and it made me feel totally enveloped in humility. So it was as if, instead of feeling humble on the inside, it was as if humility had come outside and surrounded and infused every breath and all the air. And just as I walked through this air, I felt enveloped. And all I wanted to do was just stay with that feeling and be quiet.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. So that was the beginning. And then it took a while to move past that. And it's your guidance and your leadership where you gently offer. And then it's up to us, or it was up to me as a contributing author to kind of take your hand and say, okay, I'll come to New York, or okay, thank you for the artwork. Now I can publish it on my social media. And it was as if I had everything I needed. So that's kind of my experience of the publishing so far.
Well, I'm so grateful that you trusted me and trusted the process. You know, I tell all of our global authors, I can tell you everything, but until you experience and you walk over that threshold and become a published author, we don't know what it's going to do for you. It will be transformational, that's for sure.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Well, it makes sense that we should get together and talk, because your chapter, all about the alchemy of courage, your journey has really been a testament to courage and really digging within your own self for resilience. So I'd love it if you'd share some of the early challenges, because in your chapter, you vividly describe the sense of abandonment and rejection that you felt as a child. How do you think those early experiences shaped your current understanding of resilience and courage?
It's interesting to look back on childhood when you have begun this process of transformation, because as I pass those milestones, you're going through them with a different perspective. And so in looking back, it's like really digging in and saying, now what was happening that I now can look back on and reinterpret it differently? But while I was going through those childhood experiences, from that pivotal experience around 8 years old, I was very angry. And so anger is the theme that I feel was driving most, if not all, of my behavior, to the point that I look at it like a fog. Right after that 8-year-old experience, I continued in karate. So I was very competitive. I had to overcome the fear of fighting with boys in tournaments. And I would literally cry every time I had to compete. And my mom would sit there and she would just sit with her hands crossed, and I would have to compete and I would win, but I would still cry whether I won or not. It didn't matter. And so now I look at that as those steps that develop that internal alchemy. You don't know what it is, but it's happening without your knowledge. And then making the choice that I would leave karate as the discipline and get into sports. And so I see that karate to softball to volleyball was a very important part of my childhood, because even though I didn't understand, and I don't think my family had a sense of what I was going through emotionally or any help that I might have needed, but the sports were a common thread that, despite what was going on in the environment, I was able to hold on to that and keep showing up. So there's the showing up side, just kind of like working with you. Show up. It's okay if I don't understand. It's okay if I'm afraid. Show up. Do my best. Pull out whatever is there. Other early childhood experiences that I can see really molded this alchemy is that I had a journey through multicultural experiences. Mm-hmm. So in starting at the younger years, even before that 8-year-old pivotal experience, we were vegetarian. And so we were vegetarians. We were what you would call Afrocentric, maybe. We celebrated Kwanzaa. I would wear kente cloth and all of the cultural items. And it was just a very present part of my upbringing. But then you superimpose that on mainstream society. I went to Quaker school. So superimpose that on growing up in Detroit in a predominantly Black neighborhood. And I'm going to school outside of the neighborhood most of the time. So add on to converting to Islam and going to Islamic school after Quaker school, and then Catholic school after Islamic school. And so I look at those experiences, and as an adult, you can say, wow, that really molded me into somebody that has a great understanding and appreciation for lots of cultures and lots of religion. But at the time that I was going through it, I felt out of place, fish out of water, uncomfortable, very, very different. And so those are the experiences that finally turned into me realizing that it was courage that was being molded within me by something greater. But during the time that I was going through it, it was like a fog.
Well, I'm glad that you point that out because it is this power of looking back with our intelligent, wise self in the now to reframe some of those experiences so that they don't have to carry the same weight of burden or fogginess. I mean, now that you've done this process, do you feel a greater sense of self-acceptance? Even for the younger version of you that might have been angry or
I do. I feel not only the acceptance, but I feel as if it was a part of the journey. It was a part of my purpose. With the information from the Adverse Childhood Event Study that I became aware of probably about 10 years ago or so, that really helps to put it all into perspective. Where I feel that my purpose is not only to continue to persevere through my profession and bring this joy and light that I've found into the world, channeled through my physical therapy, through my Tai Chi, it's also really important as I share this story to bring light to the effects of adverse childhood events. Abandonment is listed as one of those adverse childhood events. Cultural oppression, a history of cultural oppression, is an adverse childhood event. And I feel like with this platform, it's my job to say, hey, younger self, because I feel that we are all reflections of each other. I'm not only talking to my younger self, I'm talking to lots of younger selves who may be big people right now, or younger selves who are going through some of the challenges that I went through. And saying, you know what, it's okay. It's okay if you feel like a fish out of water. It's okay if you're angry. It's okay if you've made some bad decisions and you've made some mistakes, because there's somebody here that says, this is why. These are real concepts, these are proven outcomes that occur. And if I can be a light for anybody and save them from some of the challenges that I've gone through, some of the isolation that occurs with depression, if I can be a light, then that was the purpose. That was the reason for me to go through these things, because it was meant for me to get here and be able to share.
I love that. I love that idea about giving comfort or advice to the younger self. Because, like you, I have a high ACE score. So, for anyone who's curious to know, did you experience one of these adverse childhood experiences? You can take a free quiz online. I'll put the link below the video. But my ACE score was 7. And when I discovered that a lot of those influences were the reasons why I was depressed and had anxiety. They were the reasons why, like you, there were some periods in my adolescence where I kind of went down a road hanging with the wrong crowd. And the realization of that for me gave me so much more compassion for my younger self, because I carried a lot of shame. I mean, I wouldn't talk about my teenage years because I was so ashamed. But that perspective allowed me to really comfort my younger self.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that it's an epidemic of children and young people feeling isolated. And so coming out of shame and telling the story is really important because it takes the charges off of it. It takes the energy away from what ego is trying to torture us with by talking about it, by saying you're still loved.
Yeah. Well, I think there's another interesting turning point in your young life. Specifically, I'm talking about the trip to Sedona. And I'm curious, can you share a little bit more about how that experience really sparked a change in your perspective and set you on a path towards holistic healing?
Oh, you ask the right questions. So the trip to Sedona, I call it my mom's plan for an intervention trip. It is exactly as you describe it. It was a turning point, and I had no idea what was on its way for me. It was a trip I was looking forward to because I had heard that there were vortexes and energy centers, and I was a little bit interested in the energy, the woo-woo kind of thing, but I had not taken any steps towards accepting my assignment. And so we stayed at this beautiful Sky Ranch Lodge motel up in the mountains of Sedona, had a fireplace and a kitchen. And I remember it was very close to my birthday month, April, and it had snowed on the tops of these red rock cliffs. So you can imagine these red rocks with the white snow caps, and looking out like, oh, we're going to go hiking in that. And in Arizona, it can snow and then be warm, and it's just beautiful. So that's a backdrop of the trip. But the energy of hiking through these vortexes, these sacred spaces, it was as if you were transported to another type of world, but all you're doing is walking. And I remember very distinctly meandering up a dried riverbed up to a pretty high overlook. And it was so elevated, you couldn't really imagine, how did I just walk up the riverbed to get way up here on this rock that I can now look out over this cavernous space and see the taller cliffs. And I sat there, and a feeling came over me that I would die here. Not like literally I'm going to like take your life or anything, not a sadness level die, but like I'm done. And so sitting there with this beautiful, awesome view, it was just a feeling that came over me that said I could leave my body here and that's okay. And from that experience, it sounds like some kind of television show, but I came off the mountain, walked down, and I knew that I was going to come home and be different. And so I made a 180 degree turn in my decisions and my behaviors and my actions. I stopped some of those activities that would be associated with a person who was on a self-destructive path. So I turned away from those, and that's when I took the lessons from a man in our neighborhood that I would describe as like an urban guru. And he would teach kids who were friends of his daughter, and we would all go to his basement, and he taught us to meditate. He taught us to chant. He taught us to cook and eat vegetarian. Which is really interesting because that was the beginning of those full circle experiences where, as I said before, I was so ashamed of eating the vegetarian food as a 7 and 8 year old kid and feeling out of place. And then to be sitting right after that experience in a place where I'm being encouraged to eat vegetarian, to meditate, to get back to those cultural roots. I didn't realize, of course, what was happening at the time, but that's what happened immediately after that Sedona trip.
I love that. I love that so much. That was a true peak experience, as we describe in spiritual emergence. So I definitely want to encourage people to get a copy of the book to read the full story. But you've hinted at this experience when you were 8 years old. Can you just tell us the short version of how that impacted you? What happened?
So, I had in my memory, remembering yourself as an 8-year-old is an interesting experience. But I know that anger was the overarching thing that I was struggling with even as a kiddo. And it had something to do with me cleaning my room, and I got really mad, just outrageously upset with my mother and said, "I'm not cleaning my room. I'm going to live with my dad. Take me to my dad right now. She helped me pack my bags because I guess I had been so belligerent that she loaded me up in the car and she drove me to the place where he was teaching judo. And I was surprised that she even knew where he was because we had no relationship. So she pulled up and I walked in and by myself, and I sat and waited for him. And I said, "I want to live with you. I want to come and visit." Actually, I didn't say I want to live with you. I said, "I want to come and visit." And he looked at me. He was dressed in his gi, and I remember sitting on a bench and him saying, "Well, you can't do that." And in an 8-year-old's mind, I interpreted as, "You can't come over, you're not welcome, and I don't want you." Even though he may not have said those exact words, but in the answer to my question, the only thing I heard was no. And so, with that being the word I heard, I carried that no with me for a very, very long time. I didn't cry. I probably didn't respond outwardly. I just walked right out of that rec center and got in my mom's car. She said, "What happened?" I said, "He said no." And we drove back home. And I carried that painful experience for years, not really knowing how do you deal with that. Now I look back and say, maybe I needed a little help to overcome that. And so that was the experience, and I persevered.
And, in looking at your mental health journey, I mean, it's really been profound, from encountering that deep emotional pain to finding radical forgiveness. What other advice would you give to someone who's struggling to find forgiveness and peace in their own journey?
I highly recommend, number one, having a trained professional as a guide. So, one thing I was blessed with is I was blessed to find a counselor who had an openness to meditation, spiritual activity. And so it can be highly beneficial to find someone, but I'm well aware that there are barriers to finding that perfect person. So, outside of finding a person, researching the topic that you are struggling with can be a guide in the absence of an actual person. So, that is another way to find assistance in trusted sources, prayer or meditation. So I say prayer or meditation because I don't recommend meditation for everyone. I have come to find that meditation is not recommended for people in severe levels of depression. And so I would say be cautious with that and trust your intuition. If meditation just doesn't seem right, then it may not be right for everyone. Prayer, on the other hand, can be performed very casually. There's no rule for how to pray. It's just speaking out loud or writing that which you need and trusting that it will show up. Even if you have to write it every day for a year, the same request over and over. I've had benefits from journaling where my journals have spoken back to me, where I'm writing in them, not even understanding what is it that I'm writing, but I know I have to write these things out. That has been beneficial. And for me personally, meditation. So meditation, journaling, and with my professional background in physical therapy, I think it's just meant to be that I have to bring up body movement. So moving the body, whether it's walking, whether it's riding a bike, or just sitting and dancing in your chair, playing music, that is also a very important part. So that would be the three things: meditation, journaling and prayer, and moving the body.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you bring in the body, because somatic work is so important for our mental well-being, for healing from trauma, for getting in touch with the self and learning to love ourselves. Mm-hmm. So in addition to movement and yoga, I'd love to talk about Tai Chi, because it's been such a significant part of your healing and your professional life. So can you tell us about how the practice of Tai Chi really helped you to process and overcome your past traumas?
So I learned Tai Chi as a part of the spiritual training when I took the lessons from the friend of ours' father. He introduced us to Tai Chi as well. So I learned it, didn't really register at the time. I was in my late teens, early 20s, and didn't really register what I was learning. I just thought it looked cool and it was energetic, and that was it. And kind of put it down. Later, in my professional life, about 5 years into my profession, I hit a wall where I was really, really unhappy, disappointed, disenchanted, like, wait a minute, is this what I went to school for? And this is the job that we do? We do it this way? I said, this just can't be enough. And so I wrote a proposal to do a self-directed research project. And I took it to my director and I said, I'm going to do this research project and I can't do this job anymore. And I want this and I want that and I want this and I want that. And this amazing woman who was my director at the time, she said, okay, we are working on initiatives that you have listed on your proposal. You will have this, you will get that, you will have all these things. It was almost like she went down my wish list and she was a fairy godmother and said, yes, yes, and yes.
Wow.
And so I went on this path to do a self-directed literature review on balance. So it's so interesting to choose the topic of balance that I would look through all the research I could get my hands on, every piece of evidence that said, here's how you improve balance. Here's how you improve balance. Add on to that, that I was saying prayers, feeling like I was at the edge of being able to continue in my job, and like, well, God, here I am at the edge. I need help. And praying and praying.
Now, when you say balance, because we're talking about the body, did you mean physical balance?
I mean physical balance. And so I get these bright ideas where I'm just bent that I'm going to find what I want. And so I had this idea that I would look in the literature and I would find the answer. I would find the one prescription of exercise that would work for everybody to improve their balance in a perfect, reliable way. And now that I'm on the other side, I laugh at my prior self like, sure, you were going to find that. And so I looked through the literature, couldn't find what I was looking for. They had these extravagant ideas and philosophies and protocols. And I just thought, well, that's not what I want. And there was this one common thread that emerged throughout all the research. And it was this idea of testing. So specific evidence-based balance testing, which are called outcome measures. And so it kept coming up, and I'm reading one article and another and another and another, and the same thing keeps poking out like a thorn that you can't overlook. And you're like, oh, there it is again. But because I can be very stubborn, I thought, that's not what I'm looking for. I don't want that. And so I move on to the next and the next and the next. And then finally, there was a professor from University of Michigan who offered a 30-minute webinar Now, I have been researching this concept for 3 or 4 years, and she offers a 30-minute webinar. And I said, oh, I'll go. It's about balance. I promised I would look at everything related to balance. And in 30 minutes, she brought up the thorn that had been staring at me for years. She said, here's the testing. And all I want you to do in response for coming to my webinar is I want you to go out and use these tests. And I was like, oh, fine. If this is the thorn that I can't get rid of, I'm going to go and use these tests and see what comes of it. I started using the tests, and it was as if I had a new set of eyes. I would go out to see a patient. I would use the testing techniques that I knew about from the research and because I promised her I would do it. And it was as if I had a brand new set of eyes. I could then assess a patient in minutes, getting the same results that it would have taken days or weeks to establish the rapport, the motivation, as well as the evidence from a thorough assessment. I could do in minutes what it would take for days. And I knew very quickly, probably a week or so into starting to use the testing, that something miraculous had happened to me professionally. I didn't know completely what it was, but that was the beginning of a miracle. And I realized what miracle I had received within about a year of that experience. So 1 year after I shifted my practice to use this testing technique for balance, Medicare, one of our largest payers in the country, in the United States, it's like the most giant insurance company, mandated that all physical therapists practice the way that I had now adopted. And that is when it all came together that I knew that those prayers, the actions, all culminated with a miracle that was delivered right in my lap. So, just to put it in even more perspective, I had found this technique that Medicare was preparing for 20 years. I later found out in more research that Medicare had been trying to figure out how to come up with a reliable reporting system for the outcomes of physical therapy for 20 years. And I
Wow.
just happened to stumble right into it. Of course, we know that I didn't stumble, I was being guided. And it was all those practices from sitting on that mountaintop all the way to taking on the research, writing the proposal, doing the meditation, doing the prayer, doing the exercise. And then that's not it. That's just the first miracle. So getting on the other side of this mandate that I now was a subject matter expert on and giving lectures about the testing technique and really trying to tell everybody, hey, listen, look what I found, look what I found. On the other side of that, Tai Chi was also inside of all that literature. So here I am on the other side of that miracle, excited, excited that here I am, I'm doing really well, but it wasn't it. Within about 6 months or so, I stopped wanting to talk about it. I had some experiences with other colleagues and thinking that maybe I would go get a PhD and I'd have a research career. That would be great. And then just really quickly realizing, I don't think I want to do that. I don't want to stand and talk and do research in a lab or go through what I went through for 5 years as I was going through all this literature. Is that really the life I want? And I decided no. So I said, okay, well, then I'm not going to do that, but I'm on the other side of this wonderful experience, so I can't be sad. I'm going to keep going. And I thought, okay, well, then I'll open a business. I'll do health promotion. I'll tell the community what I found in research. I'll be the expert on balance and I will help people this and that. So I went about registering my business name, which I still have. It's called Spirit Moves. And I had all these ideas of how I would throw these events and it would be great. So I registered the business name. I registered my logo. I had all the business things done. And literally on one side of my desk were files for the business to launch this business. A card shows up in the mail, like a little postcard that says, come and get certified in Tai Chi. And so I'm sitting there at the desk and I'm thinking about the things that I want to do. And because I could be a little stubborn. I said, oh no, I'm going to make this business work. I'm going to call people. I'm going to get them to help me. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Every single door was closed. Even wonderful people that I would talk to would seem to be totally shut down to wanting to assist me. And I just thought, what in the world is going on? And then I started reflecting on the research, thinking about what was my last successful point. Okay, so it was the balance thing. It really worked. And this other thing's not working. And so I'm thinking about balance. And then I remember that Tai Chi was continuously mentioned in the literature. So you're looking at some of the most well-respected boards, like the American Geriatric Society, the British Geriatric Society. So these are societies of researchers and well-respected experts that put together these reviews of all the current literature to make recommendations that are easy to follow. So you're reading these reviews and it says, oh, balance testing, medications, and then Tai Chi. And you read another one and it'll talk about look at medications, look at this, this and that, and Tai Chi. And so the Tai Chi card is on my desk and I'm sitting there and all the energy to follow spirit moves to its fruition went away. It was as if a part of my brain was closed down to following any intuition or energy towards spirit moves, like it dropped just totally flat. And that card to get certified in Tai Chi, just a little postcard, I knew it was the thing that I had to do. And it was like, look to the left, look to the right, look to the left. Oh, looking in the other direction is gone. There's only one direction to go. So I showed up at the Tai Chi for Health. That's the shirt I'm wearing today. I showed up at the Tai Chi for Health Institute instructor, whose name is Ralph Denner. He works under Dr. Paul Lam. And he was my first instructor in Tai Chi for Health. But I got to tell you something so fantastic. So I'm at this workshop to be certified to teach Tai Chi. And I knew it was what I needed to do. So I'm at the workshop and I have experience in karate. I'm not shy or unable to perform the movements and that kind of thing. So I'm going through and learning. And so after the 2-day workshop, you had to stand in line to show your form. But that same day at lunchtime, before you were going to be tested at the end of the day, the instructor, Ralph, he says to me, oh, your name is Ginseng. I said, yeah, my dad named me Ginseng after the Chinese root for healing. He says, that's a really nice name. And then he didn't say anything else. So at the end of the day, I get in line for one instructor to watch my Tai Chi. And, she gives me the nod that you passed the test. And being my normal self, I decided I want to take the test again. So I got in the line so that Ralph could see my Tai Chi. I said, no, I want the main instructor to really, it was nice to see her, but now I want the main person to see what I can do. So I stood in line again, took the test a second time. Listen to what he said to me. After he saw my Tai Chi and he gave me a nod, he said to me, your father would be proud of you. And at the
Oh.
time when he said that to me, I wasn't speaking to my father. I had not spoken to him in maybe 20 years. I had done my counseling work. I had even found radical forgiveness and worked through the processes on paper with the book in my meditation on my own, but I had not taken any steps in real life to physically talk with him or meet up with him. And when he said that to me, it really hit me because I had no connection at the time that it even mattered. I was on my own path. I'm doing my own thing as I always have. But right then, my father was represented, his energy was represented to me. And full circle, even bring it forward, about 5 years ago, I was complete, was it five? Oh gosh, time passes so fast. We finished a pandemic and it's been 4 years. So actually, this is more like 7 or 8 years. I decided that I would reconnect with my father. I was finishing a meditation course. I enrolled in an online course, made a big investment because I knew that if I was going to make progress in business, or really bringing out any creativity that was meant to be expressed in the world, I needed a real meditation practice, a daily practice that I could really do. Because the only other practice I had was a transcendental version of sit quietly, clear your mind, use the mantra. And it's a bit more rigid, I feel, than some of the newer, more guided techniques that don't require as much of the no mind state. So I was struggling with the time that it took to do a 60-minute or longer clear your mind process. So I had enrolled in this meditation program, and it was one of the last days where you got to do Q&A. It was a wonderful meditation program. It's called Ziva. And I was supposed to get on this Q&A. But before I got on the Q&A, I had this thought. It was time to call my father. And I thought to, because I listened to my thoughts. So I know that if something is speaking to me, I got a feeling and there's a thought that's recurrent in my mind and I'm at peace, then I'm thinking, this must be intuition. This must be something I'm meant to follow. And so I couldn't get on the Q&A. I called my father probably two or three times over the past few months and been unable to get through on the numbers I had. But right then, when it was time to do the Q&A, something said, call now. Picked up the phone, called the number I had. A woman answered the phone. She said, your father had a stroke. He's in the hospital. She said, he's right in Detroit on this street, and I'll give you his number. And so I called him that day and I said, hey. And we reconnected. I stopped by and visited him. I've been driving past the rehab center for some reason. I had a few patients right on the main street. And I've been driving past his rehab center for the past few weeks. Literally, I'm not even in that area anymore, but I was then. And I walked into the rehab center, and there he was sitting on the bed and told me that he loved me, that it was good to see me, told me that I have a sister in California who made him promise that if any of his children show up, that he had to give us her number. So I immediately called my sister in California, and from there reconnected, or I shouldn't say reconnected, connected with my sister who I knew existed but had never met her or talked to her. And we began talking to each other every day for a couple of years. Now we talk off and on, but it's been wonderful. I connected with a younger sister who I had met under confusing circumstances. So I have a brother who is a year older than me, and my father made sure that I knew I had a brother that was a year older than me because we all were kind of in the same circles of association, high schools, not too far from each other. So he made sure I knew I had a brother. But other than that, his three siblings never knew that I was their sister. Even when I went for dinner with my older brother, who I asked to please introduce me to my family. And I went to dinner, and my older brother never told them that I was their sister. So we sat and had a meal, and they didn't know. So I found this out years later. So as a result of connecting with my father, I reconnected with my youngest sister, who I developed a relationship with, and she introduced me to my aunt. So I had an aunt, or have an aunt, who's my dad's sister, living a little over a mile from where I currently live. So in connecting to my younger sister, I meet my dad's younger sister, who is now integral in my life. We talk probably once a week for all of my activities and holidays. She's right there. She calls me. I mean,
It's amazing. I mean, it's
it's a
just
miracle.
beautiful to see. It is a miracle that your own healing path could then open up this healing with the family. I love, love, love this. So I want to just end with one thing. Like, your chapter is all about courage, which is definitely one of the top 10 traits of resilience. But perseverance is also a really strong trait for you with all of your studies, with, following this winding path. I really think it's remarkable. And so I just want to honor you And thank you for your perseverance, and thank you for your courage. I think this story and the work that you're doing is such a gift to the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, how can people learn more about your practice, your work as a clinical doctor of physical therapy? Where are you online?
So, my website's one way to reach me, taichiwithginseng.com. I also have a YouTube channel under the same name, Tai Chi with Ginseng. I teach online classes. I update my website, and sending me an email or a phone call is probably the best way to reach me directly.
Wonderful. Well, we will list all of that along with this video. Ginseng, once again, thank you so much and congratulations on your journey and your progress.
Oh, thank you.
Many blessings, everyone. Bye for now. Thank you for tuning into the Conscious Evolution Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave us a review and rating on your favorite podcast player. This helps us get the content out to a larger audience. And to watch the video version of the podcast, visit the Pennington Media YouTube channel. Want more info on how psychedelics may improve your mental well-being? How to choose a retreat, or what to look for in a shaman? Get on the Psychedelic Curious email journal. The link is in the show notes and on my website. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series, where each month I take a deep dive into a topic in holistic healing, trauma recovery, self-love, resilience, and psychedelic-assisted therapy. Listening to the Innate Vitality Code podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, rate the podcast, and subscribe. This helps me with getting my message out to a wider audience. For show notes and other episodes, visit innatevitality.com/podcast. That's vitality.com/podcast. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series. Each month, I take a deep dive into the topics of holistic healing, resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. Just visit innatevitality.com.